Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Hello, Mark. You know, a lot of people do not realize that EB5 is a securities offering. And being a securities offering, it's governed by the SEC.
Right. It's an immigration thing, but it's also an investment thing. And that's where the SEC comes in, right?
Right. But the other thing is, Mark, that a lot of people feel that, the SEC is only involved in those big projects, large scale projects. I have a small project. I don't need so many investors. So therefore, it can't affect me.
Right. And as we heard a couple of weeks ago with Ira Kurzban, conflicts with the SEC and some of the immigration agencies can come into play. And sometimes the SEC can overstep, or sometimes USCIS can overreact to what SEC may be looking into. It's a whole big can of worms.
It is. And believe it or not, even when I speak to developers, a lot don't even know what a PPM is. You know, PPM's a private placement memorandum, and nor do they understand the rules surrounding the same. A lot of time, whenever you say that, people switch off. They go, oh, this is going to be a boring topic. So today I thought to show everybody that this is not a boring topic, that this is a very interesting and a very topic of today, we have a really wonderful, highly rated, interesting guest.
That's right, Mona. Today we have somebody that has extensive experience in security offerings and litigation. Today, we welcome onto the podcast Edward Gartenberg. Ed is a leading SEC defense attorney practicing in Los Angeles, California. He's a former special counsel for the Division of Enforcement of the United States Securities and Exchange Commission and a special assistant United States attorney. He's also served as the chair of the securities litigation and SEC defense practice of a major international law firm. So it stands to reason why we have him on this show today, right, Mona?
That's right. Welcome, Ed. How is it in sunny California?
It's always sunny in California. We love it here.
Well, actually, we have some sun here in New York today for a change.
Well, Ed, you're also barred to practice in New York and California, but you decide to reside in California, right?
I am. I love it out in California, but I love visiting New York.
All right. I'm not going to get between you two about New York and California, I promise.
But quick question, Ed. When you're dealing with the SEC, do you have to be barred in that particular state? Or because you're in California, can you handle cases all over the country?
You can handle cases all over the country. The bar requirement generally only raises its head once you're in litigation.
I see. Well, I think, Ed, then we can jump straight to what I really want to get in, and it was all your wonderful experience that you have with the SEC and with EB5, because it's very unusual nowadays to get a really good SEC lawyer who's also versed in EB5, like you are.
Thank you. I've been very excited to get involved in the EB5 area. The SEC seems to have discovered it about 5 years ago and now made it a major priority.
Well, there are some good points as well as bad points. I mean, I know that the SEC, through a lot of investigations and stuff, have discovered a number of frauds. But they've also started harping on other issues, the broker-dealer litigation.
Yes, I think what has happened here and what people need to be alerted to is the SEC has now focused on the very real fact that EB5 investments probably fall under its jurisdiction. Certainly the SEC believes it falls under its jurisdiction because it's an investment. There is an overlay between the immigration practice and the SEC practice such that immigration people need to understand how much they are involved in the securities business.
Right. And Ed, there are two real main ways that anyone involved in EB5 has an overlap with securities. And the first part is what's in your documents and what are you actually sending out to the investor? What information are you giving to the investor? Is that accurate? And many people break rules just there.
Yes. What happens is a great many people, meaning the best in what they're doing, are focused on the fact that they're creating an opportunity under the EB-5 program. But what they have to understand is from the SEC standpoint, they are almost always involved in offering an investment. To oversimplify 70 or 80 years of SEC law, if you're giving somebody an opportunity to put their money with you or with somebody else in order to make money, that's an investment. And the SEC brings into force all of its regulations. And we have 80 years of SEC regulations. And the first issue for the SEC is, what have investors been told? And people have to understand that that's important regardless of whether the investment has five people or 50 people. You're still, from the SEC standpoint, offering an investment. And you have to do that almost always in a document that explains to investors what they're doing.
Right. We have had securities lawyers who deal with just documents on this program before, Ed, and we have had a discussion of when you do need a PPM. But often a PPM is a safeguard for you, but the PPM does restrict you. For example, if you say that you're going to spend the money in a certain way, you have to do that, correct?
That's absolutely true. Where the SEC, to take a step back, has been very active in this area in the last 5 years. There are numerous SEC cases. Starting with about 2013, the SEC began to focus on this area, issued an investor alert. And then beginning in 2013 and then picking up momentum by the end of 2015, the SEC started bringing a great many enforcement actions in the area. And there are certain things that the SEC looks at. And the first thing they look at with respect to the issuer is, what has the issuer told the investors they're going to do with the money? And if the issuer says, I'm going to do X, even if Y turns out to be a marvelous idea, better than X, that's not acceptable in the securities world. The securities world, if you've told your investor you're going to do X in order to get the money, that's what you need to do, unless you go back and have the investor agree that you can now do Y. And where that creates an enormous problem for people in the EB-5 area is going through the USCIS process, as you know, Mona, tends to lock people into a particular description of what they're going to do. And then the business reality may move them in another direction. And the SEC's view is, you told your investors you were going in one direction. You can't go to the other direction unless they've approved. Now, I'm oversimplifying, but that's the that's the problem in terms of changing what you are doing. And the consequences can be enormously troublesome.
That's right, Ed. And we're not talking about fraud per se, right? We're talking about innocent pitfalls, really.
Yes, absolutely. There's no question that in the beginning, when the SEC looked at this area, they were looking at routine kind of fraud cases that they prosecuted for decades. Somebody taking the money for themselves, telling investors they're going to use it in a project. Those are easy, and I'm assuming most of our listeners, or hopefully all of our listeners, wouldn't even think of doing that. What is more of a problem for most people is that they're not intentionally doing something fraudulent, but they are tripping on rules and regulations which are quite strict in the securities area. And use of proceeds is one area. Another area is, of course, referral fees.
Right.
The SEC has a whole body of law with respect to that.
Well, this is an area I did really want to touch on because a lot of our listeners are lawyers. And a lot of our listeners are investors who maybe have introduced another friend to a project and have been paid for that. And so they are not broker-dealers. And I really wanted to explain exactly where you are and how it really works in this, because I feel every time we mention broker-dealer violations, etc., maybe it's the terminology, but we do lose people.
But here's the way to think about this. Certainly, if you're a broker dealer, you understand what you can do and not do. But the problem is that if you're not a broker dealer, if you're an immigration lawyer, or if you're just somebody who's bringing in friends, you may be engaged in activity. And almost certainly, if you're getting a referral fee and you're here in the United States, you are engaged in activity for which the SEC views you as requiring to be registered as a broker-dealer. You have to understand this from the SEC's perspective. The SEC is trying to make sure that people who get other people into investments and get paid for that as a regular business, and they define regular business very broadly, are engaged in activity that the SEC believes should be regulated by registering as a broker-dealer with all of the requirements that go with that. What happens in the EB-5 area is that a lot of people, including lawyers, think they can bring somebody into an investment, meaning the best of everything, maybe even disclosing to the person they're bringing in that they're getting a fee. And the SEC looks at that and says, you're now a broker-dealer and you're not registered. And I've done any number of cases in this area, and the outcomes for people who do not register as broker-dealers or unaware of it can be very distasteful.
So you actually have represented EB-5 lawyers, Ed?
Yes, I've represented any number of lawyers who have made a career of bringing investors and advising investors into the EB-5 program. And I'm talking about here lawyers who believe that they're doing everything right. I represented one attorney who had gone so far as to seek an ethical opinion from a specialist that what he was doing was fine, and disclosed to all of his clients that he was getting a referral fee. From the SEC's standpoint, he was an unregistered broker-dealer, and the SEC made him disgorge all of the profits, that all of the referral fees that he had made. And in some of these cases where people have been less than forthcoming with their clients about what they're doing, thinking very honestly, I think, that they were doing nothing wrong, the SEC has come back and even charged them with fraud.
It was a common practice, though, prior to the SEC getting involved. I mean, I the older lawyers in EB-5, and I know going back 2011 and times like that, that an immigration lawyer would easily get paid. In fact, some of the big regional centers have been fined for paying in immigration lawyers.
That is correct. It is technically and very really a problem for both the person putting together the deal, the issuer, the big centers who do this, and for the lawyers. And you make an excellent point, and I know I made it ad nauseum to the SEC when the first cases came out. I said, but everybody does this. They said, great, give us a list of everybody so we can go after them too.
Ed, how well do you feel that the SEC really understands EB-5? Depending on how you look at it, it's an immigration matter with an investment component or an investment with an immigration component. It's so nuanced. Does the SEC really understand it?
It's interesting. At the very beginning, I don't think the SEC lawyers understood EB-5. But in the last few years, EB-5 has become such a focus of the SEC that there are a group of lawyers at the SEC who truly understand the area. My overall take on SEC enforcement lawyers is that for the most part, we're talking about very bright, very dedicated people, but also people whose mission is to narrowly focus on the securities laws. Yeah. So while they may understand the EB-5 area to some extent, their focus is only on enforcing the exact letter of the securities laws. So the big warning to issuers out there and to immigration lawyers in the area and people putting together deals is that the SEC is going to look at whether you're complying with the securities laws, regardless of whether it's good or maybe even bad for the investors. Their focus is narrowly on the securities laws. And even if they understand EB-5, their concern is enforcing the securities laws.
Well, here's the big deal, Ed. EB-5 is not about immigration. It's not about SEC. It's primarily a business. And in business, as you mentioned before, things change. As long as I suppose you get your investors' consent, things are all right as far as PPM changes. But what about what we are seeing nowadays, which is a lot of smaller projects, the actual projects themselves going out and getting investors and, you know, getting an administration fee and paying either themselves or paying any third party?
When they're getting investors, As far as the Securities and Exchange Commission is concerned, they're in the securities business. And that also means not only the SEC, but if something goes wrong, as an issuer, you can expect that there'll be some lawyer out there looking to put together a group of investors who are going to say it's the issuer's fault. And the fault is not necessarily focused on whether it was a good business or a bad, but whether the disclosure to the investors was accurate. Disclosure is the magic word in securities. Okay. As long as the proper disclosure is there, that tends to answer most, not all, but most questions.
So how does the issuer exemption play into security deals and the raising of capital?
There is an exemption for issuers where the person himself who is raising the money has the ability to go out and raise the money. But the issuer exemption limits what you can do and is also a lot narrower than many people believe, so that you find a lot of people taking comfort in the issuer exemption when the SEC is not going to look at it. And Mona, you and I were involved in a case where that issue came up, and I argued very vigorously to the SEC that the person who they were focused on was subject to the issuer exemption. And the SEC took a very narrow view of what the issuer exemption meant. So if someone's relying upon it, they need to have securities counsel really check to make sure they've, to the letter, relied upon the issuer exemption and to the restrictions that are involved in it. As a general rule, it is not a huge comfort zone to the person raising money.
That's really interesting, especially as we, as I say, are seeing this more and more of developers raising their own capital. Especially we're seeing this when developers from a specific country are raising their own capital from that particular country. What about the fact that you can use the administration fee for fees or costs associated with the offering? Doesn't that allow you some kind of protection?
It allows some kind of protection in terms of using the fee. But if you're using the fee as a way of reimbursing somebody in the United States on a per transaction basis, that person is still becoming a broker as far as the SEC is concerned. And if the issuer is helping that, if the person behind the deal is trying to help that occur, both the individual who's getting paid through the administrative fee and the issuer who's making the payment are subject to potential liability. So it's a tricky area. The take home for people looking at this is to understand that the SEC is looking at this as an investment. And because it is, it's subject to all the rules and regulations of one of the most regulated parts of the United States.
Mark, just in case you or many of the listeners are not sure what we're talking about, the administrative fee is a fee which is paid on top of your 500,000 or million or however much you've paid for the EB-5. So in a lot of cases, it's 50,000. In some cases, it's 55,000 or even 60,000.
Right. And that is, those admin fees go in to pay the referral fees to the agents if they're involved, correct?
Well, if there's an agent involved, and this is the whole crux, because Ed, what is an agent as far as SEC is concerned? What is a legitimate agent?
Well, let me put it this way. The safer agents, the agents that the SEC has to date never really looked at, are overseas agents. If you have an agent overseas and the money is truly only going to the person overseas and that person is subject to the rules and regulations of their country, the SEC has not brought cases directed against those people. Where someone is using an overseas agency, but really as a conduit to pay money back to somebody in the United States, the SEC has looked at those people and said, oh, you're in the United States now. You're someone clearly subject to our authority. And all we are looking at is whether you meet the requirements of someone we think should be registered as a broker-dealer. And the SEC's definition, and there are a number of factors, but to oversimplify, typically the SEC is looking at, if you get your money on what the SEC calls a transaction-based basis, which simply means if you're getting paid X amount of dollars for each investor you brought in, the SEC is almost certainly going to find that plus something else you did makes you subject to registration. And if you haven't registered as a broker-dealer, the SEC is going to say you violated the securities laws by being an unregistered broker-dealer. And therefore, the SEC is going to go after somebody for that and has done this numerous, numerous times. I'm talking about honest people trying to do their best, are not vaguely thinking they're doing anything wrong. But those people are subject to this regulation. If they take a second step and try to skirt the law to be what I would call too cute by half, then the SEC can turn around and has turned around and up the stakes by alleging fraud. And if somebody's found to have committed fraud, it's an enormous problem. Their reputation is ruined. They're subject to penalties by the SEC. The SEC is now beginning to look at making one of the requirements of settling with the SEC, or if you litigate with them, that you're out of the EB-5 business entirely. And as you know, Mona, there's legislation pending in Congress that would make that a matter of statutory law.
Right, right. And again, it can happen out of an innocent violation. I'm not talking about fraud per se. Ed, there are lots of SEC lawyers out there, but not everybody understands litigation or how the SEC operate when they have an investigation. And there are more and more investigations. SEC lawyers are expensive. Do you really need an SEC lawyer to handle your investigation? That's a question which comes up over and over again. I have a lot of clients, a lot of people who try to handle everything themselves because they say, we haven't got anything to hide. We don't need to spend so much money on an SEC lawyer.
Many years ago, there was a commercial on TV with a car mechanic who would say, you can pay me now or pay me more later. What happens, there are a number of very talented people who are even securities lawyers who don't do SEC enforcement work.
That's right.
And it is really a specialty that is worth looking at if the SEC makes a call. You have to understand that the SEC enforcement are basically police. They see the world in black and white. They have a different set of mindset as to what a regulation is, and that when one begins talking to them and honestly answers the questions, as I will always advise my clients to answer honestly, unless there's some reason they should take the fifth, but assume that people who are honestly doing their work, it pays to have somebody who's experienced in SEC enforcement help guide you in how you frame things. There's a tendency to answer as a business person, right, and not realize what you're saying. And in some of that loose language that you use, the SEC will find violations. You have to remember that when SEC enforcement comes knocking at your door, usually they're knocking at your door because somebody in the organization has decided somebody has done something wrong. And while they're not pre-decided, the natural disposition is once they've begun an investigation, somebody is going to be named as an enforcement target someplace down the road. So it really pays to get that advice early on. I've had any number of cases where I've come in after the fact and said, gee, I wish we'd talked first.
I know.
Because if you
had to pick up the pieces.
Mona, I'm sure that has never happened to you in the practice of immigration law, right? Somebody brings you in so late, and you're like, wow, I wish you'd brought me in earlier.
So, Ed, if you don't have the right lawyer or you don't have the right representation, have you ever seen a situation whereby, where the SEC have started to look at a situation or a project, and suddenly they've started filing injunctions?
Yes, and sometimes they will even do, I've even seen situations where they do that, where the people involved in the project have never been contacted at all. So that if the SEC contacts you, that's an opportunity. for you to get a lawyer in who knows SEC enforcement and begin to try to head things off. What people need to understand, if I may for a moment here, is this is not a simple question of a minor fine. This can be the end of somebody's business forever if the SEC chooses to go after you vigorously enough.
There's been a lot of criticism lately of the SEC overstepping their mark. I know you may not want to state it on the air, but what is your opinion?
Well, the SEC, I think, is, you have to remember, this was my theme earlier, they are focused on the SEC regulations. They are not necessarily focused on what the impact is on the individual investors. I've had the situation, albeit in a non-EB-5 case, where the SEC came in, froze the investment, put in a receiver, took over the project, and the issuer's wrongdoing was he had used the money differently than indicated in the PPM and had made more money for the investors in doing it. It didn't matter to the SEC. He just hadn't done what he had promised, even though what he had promised was not as profitable for the investors as what he did.
Well, the SEC are not known for being business people. They're very straight. That's we do know. They don't see gray. It's black and white.
That's it, exactly. And when they come in, and they've done this on a great many cases, they may come in and turn to the judge without ever giving pre-notice to the people involved and obtain a court order that freezes not only all the money on the project, but all of the individual's personal funds until that person persuades a federal court, if he can or she can, that there's a reason to release the funds. And that can be for what the people involved deem as a technical violation. The SEC is focused on the fact whether you complied with the securities laws or not. And that tends to be the limit of their focus.
Ed, what does it take to begin or even trigger an SEC investigation of a project?
Very interesting. The SEC doesn't disclose how an investigation began, and almost anything can trigger it. Typically, it may be a complaint by an investor. I have seen it as a complaint by a partner to somebody involved in the investment. It could be USCIS that raises the issue. So there's no one thing. And once the issue is raised for the SEC, the SEC feels almost compelled to look at it. Another area which people should understand is there's a whistleblower provision. Yeah. That is, if you come into the SEC and you say, wait, there's fraud going on here, you can wind up paid under the SEC whistleblower program, so that people who provide original information about EB-5 fraud that leads to enforcement sanctions of at least $1 million are entitled to an award of between 10% and 30%.
And I'll go ahead and make the joke right now. They don't have to be registered as the dealer broker to get that commission.
That's right. And in one case I know of in 2013, somebody collected almost $15 million as a whistleblower.
Was that the ACC case?
I've forgotten the name of the case, but it was in 2013. It was a $14.7 million award.
Ed, we've really got into the dark waters of the SEC and the EB-5 program, but I do want to assure our listeners that, and I want you to tell from your experience, the fact that there are 800 plus projects, EB-5 projects out there, there really is not that much fraud that the SEC have uncovered in comparison, correct?
That's correct. There are relatively few. And this can happen in any investment area. Most of the people that I've seen in the area are trying to comply with the law. And many of the people trip on technical violations, not understanding that they are. And sometimes I've been able to go into the SEC and deal with those technical violations with no sanctions whatsoever. It's a good area if there's a problem to get somebody to go in and help you navigate dealing with them. They are basically good, hardworking people at the SEC. They have a particular focus, and it's best to work with somebody who understands their focus. But most EB-5 projects are being run perfectly legitimately.
Thank you, Ed.
Yes, thank you, Ed. It's good to know that even with the talk of some SEC investigations, that most EB-5 projects are running legitimately. Edward Gartenberg, thank you so much for joining us on EB-5 Investment Voice.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being with us today on EB-5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB-5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB-5 Investment Voice.